Playing Gosport's best music 24 hours a day.
On air and online at www.gosporthospitalradio.co.uk.
Since 1993.
This is Gosport Hospital Radio. Bringing Gosport closer to you. Paul Dodd on Gosport Hospital Radio.
Hello, good afternoon and welcome. It is I, Paul Dodd, with Community Hour this week. And I'll get onto that in a minute. Oh. So why am I doing Community Hour? Well, this time last year, in fact, October last year, I was very privileged to interview what I still consider to be one of the bravest women I've ever met. Her name is Charlotte Fairhall. She had a young daughter called Sophie, and we'll tell you all about that. But Sophie was diagnosed quite early on in her life with cancer, and passed. And brutally passed, to be honest. And I invited Charlotte in to talk about Sophie's Legacy, the charity that she's the CEO of, which she did. 12 months on, I thought it would be really nice to bring her back and see how successful her charity was and where she's been and what she's done and what's coming up next. And that's today's show. Okay, so that's enough of the theme tune. We've had enough talk, and I've managed to chat to my little mate Charlotte next to me. Ladies and gentlemen, can I introduce you to Charlotte Fairhall? Charlotte, good afternoon.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Oh, no, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. So I was going to recap the story so that I didn't have to put you through it again, but it is quite a cathartic process for you. So I'm going to let you tell people the story.
Yeah, so Sophie was diagnosed with cancer, rhabdomyosarcoma, back in September 2020. It's the good old COVID times, when she was just turned nine. She went through nine rounds of extremely aggressive inpatient chemotherapy at Southampton and 7 weeks of radiotherapy to the whole of her abdomen in London. There's only two places that do radiotherapy for children in this country, and London is our closest. She carried on, obviously, her treatment, and we got to the end of the frontline treatment, and pretty much the majority of her tumour had all gone. She went through, was meant to be on maintenance chemotherapy, which was me giving her chemo at home every day and going in once a week as a day patient for chemo, and that was meant to last a year. But sadly, 8 weeks into that, she relapsed with a brand new tumour in the area that had the most amount of treatment possible. So we knew at this point that relapsing whilst on treatment is a really, you know, it's not great. And it showed how aggressive this tumour was, that it came back so quickly from stopping the frontline treatment. and her body was quite battered, to be honest. So they made it quite clear to us that it was now about biding time rather than ever getting a cure. There was, you know, we were never going to beat this one. And so we did try some palliative chemo to try and give us that bit more time, but sadly that didn't work. And so she relapsed in the June of 21, and in the July we decided with Sophie, because we were very upfront and honest with her, that she said, "I've had enough, Mum," and we stopped all treatment. She set out writing a bucket list of things that she wanted to achieve in the very short time we had left. And, you know, write a bucket list at age 9 still. It was with the help of her older sister, she achieved some incredible things on there. But what made her list really different is that she wanted some things changed in her memory, and made me promise her in her final couple of weeks that I would go ahead and fulfil her final wishes, which is what has now become the backbone of our charity and what we do. So, and she sadly passed on the 18th of September 21, age just turned 10. She was 10 in the August. So, so
her bucket list was all about other people.
Yeah, a lot of that was. I mean, she got to have some amazing experiences. She wanted to meet things like, she wanted to meet Gordon Ramsay and cook with him, and she got to do that. And, or she wanted a pair of high heels, or she wanted to be an adult for the day, because she said, "I'll never get to be one," which did break me at the time. But, and I said, like, be an adult for the day. Yeah. And she said, "You go to work, you cook, you clean, and you drive." And I thought that probably sums up most of our days. but she went around in an ice cream truck and poured the biggest ice creams to all of her friends. And she had some amazing ideas and experiences, and thankfully we got to achieve them all, but all through the most horrific pain I've ever seen anyone go through, to be honest. She would wake up each day in horrific pain and say, "Give me every drug you've got, Mum, because I need to get through today." And she just had the most incredible attitude and spirit to make the most of every day she had left. She did not waste a second. And even when she became bedbound at the very end and we were back in hospital, she was still up trying to design medals or trying to do some things to try and literally make the most of every day she had left. She packed in a lot in those couple of months.
But her diagnosis wasn't good either, was it?
No, so it took a while to get diagnosed. I mean, we were in COVID times, so trying to see a GP and everyone in that time was tricky, really tricky, to be honest. We did get to see one in the middle of August, but they sadly missed the tumour. They felt something was hard, but they thought it was something else. They thought it would have been potentially a bowel infection, but it wasn't. It was a tumour. But I don't blame, you know, I've done a lot more in research into this now, and I don't blame the GPs or any of the health professionals, to be honest, because there is no training for any health professional on children's cancer, apart from when they qualify. Now, bear in mind this, you know, this GP I surmised would have qualified a good 20, 30 years before. You know, how can anyone keep up to date with information of signs and symptoms when you're not given any training? No. So I don't put any blame at all.
And such a rare cancer as well.
Yeah, yeah. Rhabdo is about 70 children a year get. It's one of the most common soft tissue cancers. But, you know, thankfully it is, you know, more rare for children to get that. But it does happen. You know, around 70 children in the UK get that a year. And, you know, but our odds were stacked against us at the start, to be honest. We were given less than 50% survival at the very beginning. Wow. So it was just encased in the whole of her abdomen. It was, you know, we call it quite late. So, and that's why I think we've been working so hard to try and improve children's cancer outcomes, you know, with the government. I wanted to go right to the top.
Yeah.
And that was my ultimate aim at the beginning. Because we could have raised, you know, which we did, we raised a lot of money for Alice's Ark, which is one of the cancer charities that support, that fundraise for Rhabdo and create some amazing, they're doing some amazing work. But we wanted to make some real fundamental difference at the very top and then push that down to all cancers, to be honest. And the solid tumours are lagging decades behind those that are the blood cancers, which for children has improved huge. You know, in the 70s, if you had leukemia, it was pretty much a death sentence.
Yeah, you were gone.
But now, 90% of those children will survive. So the there has been huge change.
Yeah.
But the solid tumours hasn't really changed at all in the last 30 plus years. So we know that there was a lot more work to do with that.
I mean, I know when we did the interview last year, I was amazed then, and I'm amazed still today. Because in the beginning, they put it down that she'd started her periods.
Yeah.
She was just heavy bleeding, and it was all down to that. And how you've not blamed is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, I just think, if you're not given any training, it's really hard to say, when they're not, it's not a common thing to see, thankfully, in most GP practices, that it's not going to be a common thing they see. And, they're seeing such a wide range of illnesses and for all children every day. And you get that one that you might miss.
Yeah.
And it must play on those, the professionals that we saw, and it must play on their minds. And I just think we need to change this. We need to change the whole system so that there is training, there is awareness campaigns out there for the whole of the public, so that everyone knows, in the same way on meningitis or on bowel cancer, all of the classic signs. We want the whole public to know what are the classic signs for children's cancer, because then it's much more aware. You're not going to miss these things.
No, and the same thing, guys with prostate, women with breast cancer. I was surprised there wasn't more put into cervical cancer, when that hit its headlines a couple of years ago. But they did, but you've kept this impetus up. I'm going to take a break and play your first record.
Yeah.
Coldplay. Why?
Yeah. So this one always is really, really close to us. The words really resonate with us. We played this at Sophie's funeral in the crematorium when we went there. And it's... yellow was our favourite colour, but the words in it are really poignant for us.
So have a listen.
Oh, what a thing to do. I bleed myself dry.
Look at the stars, look how they shine for you. And everything you do. Yeah, they're all yellow. Amazing lyrics.
Yeah. And I think the ones where it says that, you know, your skin and bones turned into something, you know, that's for us is that, you know, she's no longer here, but it's turned into something, you know, she's up there above and, you know, we think of it and the stars and, yeah, those words are really poignant for us.
Didn't ask you last time. What did you do with the ashes?
They're at my house, in my lounge, that in a box we got painted just for Sophie. But yeah, I can't let her go yet. And whether I do in time is, I'm not sure. And I have lots of us in the family. We've got jewellery made up with our ashes in as well. I did that this year. Finally got round to accepting, yeah, we need to share a bit of her around. So yeah, all the family on both sides all decided to have a piece of jewellery and have that made for her.
So, yeah. It will ease. I just hope it's not too quick for you.
Yeah, it's a slow. It's going to be slow. It's 3 years, just over 3 years since she passed. So it's not long at all, and it's painful, really painful to deal with when you think of it. And it's easier to block it out and to keep busy, which is what I do a lot of, and to do other things because that feels easier than trying to actually deal with it, which I do. But
so it's talking about the pain. She had two sisters.
Yes.
Lucy and Amelia.
Yes, that's right.
Lucy's 5 years older.
Yeah, she is.
About to leave secondary school-ish? No, left it.
No, she's on a final year of college now.
Is she?
She's 18 and driving and, yeah, adult.
And Amelia is, by 1 week, exactly 12 months older. Younger.
Yes, so 51 weeks between them. That's a crazy woman having
two children. Now, if I remember rightly, Lucy's birthday is at the time of, give or take a couple of weeks, of Sophie's passing.
Yeah.
Amelia's birthday is within a week of her own, of Sophie's birthday.
Yeah.
How are they coping?
So what I've seen in the last few years is they go through waves, and it's like waves of grief that they don't remain in that grief. Or, you know, little things can hit them and little triggers for them, and it's, you know, we put in the support when they need it. Mm. Amelia's had, you know, nearly 3 years worth of play therapy weekly. And she goes to a specialist school because she's got autism and has a lot of support through the school. She has a lot of struggles. But, you know, we've got the support in there and we just hope that we can, you know, keep supporting them all the way through. You know, Lucy's 18th was in September, her birthday, and I know that she found that really tough, that Sophie wasn't here again. So all those big milestones, I think, for the rest of their lives, will always have this poignant bit of something missing.
So with Amelia and her support, did she have that support before Sophie's?
No, I battled to get that in place.
You've done really well.
Yeah, it was a real battle to get her to this school.
That's a 3 to 5 year wait for most kids. You've done really well.
Yeah, it was a real battle to get her into this school. I did, you know, went for an education tribunal with the local authority not long after Sophie died. I went through that, and I knew what she needed. She was not coping at her mainstream school, and I knew. And she's doing really well at her new school. She's been there a year and a half now, and yeah, doing well. And it's quite a therapeutic school. She needs that support and has that pretty much daily of different her little battles that she has. Because, you know, it's even things like, you know, everyone was saying Sophie was in a better place. Well, you tell that to a child who's got autism, she's like, well, I want to join her then. Because if that place is so good, I want to go and join her. So she went through quite a while of wanting to kill herself and wanting to go and join her because everyone kept saying that. And, you know, we've had to...
I have an autistic grandson and no, you know, everything has to be routine.
Yeah.
We got to the point a couple of weeks ago, he was in class and they'd asked him to do something or other over lunchtime. But he knew he had to go and do this, that and the other at lunchtime. So he said, no, I can't because I've got to go and do that. The teacher got all upset with him. He walked out of school. So, of course, my son and daughter get a phone call going, he's walked out, you know, we're going to put him on dispensation, etc. And they said, well, no, you know what the problems are. You know he needs the structure. You just change his structure with no notice and without talking to him. You can't do that with these kids.
Yeah.
You know, they need that. And immediately must be finding it so difficult.
Yeah, and an example of, you know, a couple of weeks ago in school, she had this sudden onset of pain in her tummy and it escalated very quickly to the point an ambulance was called. I had the call. I was like, right, I'm on my way. Obviously, to go and see her, there was a four-hour wait for an ambulance, so I just said, get her in my car. But she was, when I arrived, I could hear her at the school. I mean, she was hysterical, screaming the place down. And you just couldn't make any sense of her through her screaming. But I just said, put her in my car and I'll take her myself. I'm not waiting 4 hours for an ambulance with her like this. So, you know, and on the way there, she's screaming, I'm dying like Sophie. And I think she'd made that correlation between I've got pain in my tummy.
Absolutely.
To I'm dying. And that's what's really hard for people to understand, that 3 years on, that, you know, this trauma lives with them. And, you know, I know even Lucy has, you know, if she gets anything wrong with her, her first thought is cancer or something serious is wrong, because that's been their experience, sadly, in life.
And what was your thought?
It was hard for me, I tell you. I was thinking at the time going, I don't think I can do this again. But I knew that actually when she said that, I thought she's actually got herself in more of a state because of the relationship of the understanding of the pain. And I thought there's more to this. And when she'd seen the doctor at the hospital, she'd calmed right down. And I thought, yeah, I think a lot of this was anxiety, a lot of fear. But yeah, I did well up at the point of driving. I'm not sure. Emotionally, this is tough. But as I've learned with Sophie, you just have to put on that brave front and you have to be strong for your kids. They need you at that point to be strong and somehow I spoke to a psychotherapist that I see afterwards and said, I don't know how I quite did that and not break.
Because you are the bravest woman I've ever met. I'm telling you that.
Tell me I'm not.
Yeah,
I think you just have to. I think as a mum, and I think my background as a social worker, she says, probably put me in really good stead. You learn how to put on a front professionally. And I think she says that you do that probably a lot in your work and everything else, that you've just learned how to do that. I was a social worker for 16 years, so you get very used to having to put a front on when you see horrific stuff and learn how to be able to cope under extreme pressure and situations. So I think it all gave me good grounding for what was to come. Little did I know, but it sadly for the girls, they're always going to be living with this trauma. And something I never wanted them to ever have is a traumatic childhood, but you know, sadly that's what's happened. And but now we will just support them as best we can to give them the best chance we can of having a good life.
Is it genetic?
No, we did get every genetic test done with Sophie. Initially, they thought it could be. But we've had every test going.
Excellent.
So it's definitely not. But they always say lightning doesn't strike twice. And in the back of my head, I always think it never thought it'd strike once.
Yeah.
So back of my mind is always my fear. I had a benign tumour that arrived on my back this year, and my first thought is it's cancer. And it was a huge tumour that came up. So I had that removed with an operation. But yeah, until they had it removed and tested, I wasn't going to be convinced by anyone that they were, that it was not. But thankfully, after quite a few months and everything else and the operation, it's all fine and it was a benign tumour. But it's always going to be our first thought, I think, is...
Of course it is.
It's cancer, because it's the world we've been hit with.
This is a real apt time to be playing your next record. Why this one?
Well, this is definitely for Hannah and our team. She wanted to take that song.
And you have got a great team, haven't you?
I have an amazing team, and I'm really grateful. She loves Take That. So if Take That are listening, get her some tickets.
We're not that good.
Yeah, I know. I also think, though, the words, I just love this. It's a really upbeat song, but Hold Up That Light is, you know, again, the words of it all, it's just really poignant. But yeah, this is for Hannah.
You can dance if you like. You can sing every line of every song. No, you don't have to steal the show. It was your show all along as the orchestra played. The people take the seats. There's no room left in this house. It's only you and me. And if life is your stage, I'll be watching. As we start rehearsing every scene, the words to everything, we realize that the crowd is listening, and then the tears fall down on your face, and exactly the right place, as the people start to stand up in the aisle.
Hold up a light. Take that. Right, let's get away from Sophie a little bit. Just let's leave the personality out of it. QA.
Yes.
I unfortunately had to take my grandson into QA a couple of weeks ago for eye surgery. You remember my grandson lives with us?
Yeah.
And when we got there, we could see Sophie's legacy on that ward everywhere.
Mm.
You know, there were beds for the parents. There was put up beds for the parents. There was a kitchen for the parents. There was their own parents' room. And I remember turning to my wife and saying, Charlotte did this. Actually, Sophie did this. But Charlotte did that. I was a little bit... I'm not going to say upset, because I get it. But I was a little bit peeved at the greed of some people. You know, considering why they are there, and they still seem to forget it. How much of what you do has been abused?
I guess that's always really hard to probably ever put a figure on, because we're not there 24 hours a day. You know, we cover 12 hospitals in the same, what we do, and obviously at Portsmouth, we do across all 12, and not just one ward. So we have obviously lots of wards, like a QA is 5 wards that we cover, you know, neonatal intensive care and the children's A&E and lots of different ones. Southampton has 13 wards. So to monitor all of them across all 12 hospitals would be a lot.
Because you also look after the PICO unit as well, don't
you,
Southampton?
Yeah, every ward where there's a baby or a child, we cover them. It's not just children's cancer, it's literally every ward that there is. And there is huge amounts of wards, as I've discovered. Mm. And so it is hard. What we say is that there's lots of different reasons why someone might take a bit more than what we would like. And that might be that they're struggling. We've known that families are struggling to even, you know, provide food at home. And if they need to take a bit more to feed themselves, you know, I will never stop a parent from that. We've had a couple of incidents, sadly, where there is particular, the odd families that do completely do abuse it.
Yeah.
And will clear out the whole room. Sadly, that doesn't happen on a regular basis, and we've struggled when that does, because, you know, it's different of taking a few extra packets of crisp to then clearing out the whole room that's there. But sadly, they're very few and far between, and I hope Sophie sends a dollop load of karma their way. And that's why I always say, I think if you put out good, you get something back. So Sophie would have been absolutely fuming.
Sophie's
and I
coming
think
for you.
She would be, and actually, I think, you know, we hopefully live in the world where everyone, you know, it's that kindness and we try and respect things, then hopefully, good karma comes back. But, yeah, but obviously what we do, of course, you know, all of the hospitals, you know, is we make sure that there is access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's why I wouldn't ever want to take it away from being in the parents' room, that they can access it. Because at 3 a.m, you might have just finally settled your child from being, you know, in A&E and, you know, screaming the place or whatever it is, and you finally accept a child and you can leave them for a few minutes to go and get something. And the last thing we want to do is them to ask the staff, because parents just wouldn't. You know, we want them to be able to go to the room, have a few minutes break, go and get a coffee from the coffee machine we've got there, go and get a meal, go and get whatever it might be from the room. And actually, we just hold the greater good that, you know, it's there then for everyone. And,
well,
and we will keep
supply. It wasn't greatly abused by any stretch of imagination.
Yeah.
The room was out of the way,
yeah.
So you didn't feel as though you were being looked at what you were doing. The nurses were instant with it. I mean, one of the problems we have with the hospital radio is that the nurses, some nurses don't even know we exist,
mm.
So they don't know this is at the side of the bedside table for the patients. So the patients are ignorant to what's actually available to them.
Mm.
The children's ward was not. It was, this is here, that's there, help yourself, do it.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, it is tough sitting by a bed, you know, 5 or 6 hours at a time with a child that's either unconscious, you know, mm. or he's yapping. And in your 60s, that energy isn't with you anymore, you know. So it is, well, you can have him the next half an hour, I'm going down for a cup of tea. But to just have that freedom of going backwards and forwards when you wanted to. Thank you.
That's right. It's, you know, I love the difference that we've been able to make. And whenever time I go up to any of the hospitals and I can see the difference from what we had on our experience, which, you know, I had a bed, you know, but actually the parents' room, when I went in, there wasn't anything there I could eat or drink. I didn't drink hot drinks, so a bit wasted for me when you go in and there's a kettle. But, you know, you can now go in and there's so much more. And, you know, and we hear back from the families of how much supported. We only had two again last night message in, and they got a parent pack given to them, and they literally burst into tears. They felt like saying that, because actually everything they needed was given to them. And, you know, going through real trauma, and that was in Poole Hospital, and, you know, that's been a battle to get into, but we're in there now. And, you know, it's, you will never realise how the little things, like getting a toothbrush or getting a drink or a packet of crisp or whatever it is, those little bits, how much of a difference it makes when you're in that huge trauma and you're not putting yourself first because you're on adrenaline and you're thinking about your child, and you totally forget yourself until it's quite late. You know, I was 10 days in with Sophie and I passed out, you know, but I totally forgot that I needed to look after me and to be able to get through this. So we're there to scoop up, to remind every parent, look after yourself.
Yeah.
We're here, we'll look after you so you can look after your child. And hopefully that's the message that we keep continually trying to push out when in hospital.
And it is a rare event that something will change within that couple of minutes that is so distraught. You know, take that couple of minutes, you know, they will still be there. And if they're not, I'm really sorry. They wouldn't have been anyway. You know, you need to take a couple of minutes. If timing's unfortunate, it's unfortunate. Right. I want to touch on Pride of Britain.
Yes.
Whoa, weren't you amazing?
Oh, that was a surreal experience.
I looked at the interviews the next morning, and I sat there on the television, and I watched you walk on, and I went, "That's all my interviews gone then. I'm not good enough for it anymore." But I obviously am, so thank you. So tell me how the Pride of Britain came about.
So, unbeknown to me, quite a few people nominated me for the Pride of Britain, which I found initially quite difficult because it takes a whole team, as you know, to make something work. I just happen to be the one at the very top that is in the public profile and gets this recognition. But it's the whole team that in the background that actually are there making the difference day in, day out. But, you know, as the team said, but you're doing this for us. Go and wave that flag for us and, you know, really raise the awareness of the charity. So I was like, okay, yeah. But, you know, and it was incredible. So we got shortlisted to the final four for the South, which was an incredible achievement. And then to hear that we had won it for the whole region was totally unbelievable. And they all surprised me. In fact, lots of them, they all arrived at the office with the TV crew, and I knew nothing. How they got away with that, I still don't know how they did it. But yeah, it was amazing. And then
Hannah.
I told her. I said, "I'm never trusting you again. That's it."
Trust me, as one of those people who organise this sort of thing, Hannah.
Yeah, I know.
Every time it's Hannah.
I know, she's amazing.
Thank you, Hannah.
She's absolutely amazing. I'd be lost without her in part of the charity. But she managed to somehow pull that off. And then we obviously went to the final, at the final of the Pride of Britain, which I went with Lucy, my oldest. And an amazing experience. But I've never seen so many celebrities in one room. And you're allowed to just go up to them, which was even more surreal. Sitting there having their dinner and you could just go up to them.
No. This is the Pride of Britain, all right? You are the celebrity, okay? And we get this a lot. But it isn't you're allowed to go up to them. They're not gods.
Yeah.
They were allowed to come to you,
yeah.
You know, because you are the person.
Well, they said it's your night, so they expect you to, you know, they know you're going to go up to them all. And some, it's interesting seeing some of the celebs, what it's like when there's no cameras and everything there. And actually, yeah, some were not great, but some, you know, loads were absolutely amazing.
So go on then, who did you meet?
So Peter Andre and his wife, which we've been trying to get to his wife for a long time. She's a doctor, so I wrote a letter in the hope that they were there and we saw them. We really want them to become on board with the charity, but he was lovely, exactly what you see. The boys from McFly, so Tom and Danny were there, and they were amazing, really good lads. James Corden was there.
Oh, wow.
He wasn't so great, I will say. He was,
aloof is the word I'd use.
Yeah, I sometimes think they forget where they've come from.
Yep.
Which I always said, you know, everyone needs to remember that.
Yes.
That, so... Yeah, but yeah, there were some amazing, amazing. There were so many. And, you know, even in the toilet, you're queuing in the toilet and there's Dame Kelly Holmes in front of me and I'm getting a selfie with her in the toilet while I'm queuing. It was just surreal. But an amazing experience and, you know, and great to raise the awareness of the charity.
And on the telly the next morning.
Yeah, it was on Thursday night. It was on. So we went up on the Monday and they filmed. And again, it was really interesting seeing the filming because so much goes on behind the scenes that you don't see. And then it went out on ITV on the Thursday evening. And yeah, which was great. And I went in for an interview with Meridian in the Whiteley Studios that day live as well. So I was literally balancing, trying to come back from an event, Amelia's parents' evening, and turn up to the ITV studios. I was like, oh, okay. So Amelia's in the back watching me on the TV and I'm literally going straight in, running in. So, yeah, the joys of juggling parenthood and trying to run a charity.
So next up, Olivia Rodrigo.
Yes. So this was Sophie's favourite artist, Olivia Rodrigo, and her favourite song, Driver's Licence, and again, one that we played at her funeral. And, will always be one of her songs, really.
Got my driver's license last week, just like we always talked about. Cause you were so excited for me to finally drive up to your house. But today I drove through the suburbs, crying cause you weren't around. And you're probably with that blonde girl who always made me doubt. She's so much older than me. She's everything I'm insecure about. Yet today I drove through the suburbs. Cause how could I ever love someone else? And I know we weren't perfect, but I've never felt this way for no one. And I just can't imagine how. Said forever, now I drive alone past your street. And all my friends are tired of hearing how much I miss you, but I kind of feel sorry for them, cause they'll never know you the way that I do. Yet today I drove through the suburbs and pictured I was driving. Your street. I just can't imagine how you could be so okay now that I'm gone. Cause you didn't mean what you wrote in that song about me. Cause you said forever, now I drive alone past your street. Yeah, you said forever, now I drive alone past your street.
Olivia Rodrigo, driver's license. Oh, and I'll need to remember, because I missed it last time, to just stop that and play it out. One of the problems with the interview we did last time was I wasn't aware that the internet carries on playing. So I'd shut it down, carry on talking, it's playing in the background. So I need to just go ding, 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 ding. And that's it, gone now. Just one left. So we've got a few minutes left. Not long, in fact, by any stretch of imagination. So we've done SOFA, we've done QA, we've done the Pride of Britain. Where are you now as a charity?
So we obviously are continually to try and make some national change while we're trying to still support the 12 hospitals in the south. We have been working with NHS England for the last few years, but really making a real big strides with certainly feeding parents in hospital nationally. We funded this year over 15 hospitals in the country, up from like Bolton, Tideside.
Wow.
We had Manchester, we've got Wolverhampton, Exeter, I'm seeing on Friday.
How did you choose your hospitals?
We put it out to the whole country and they could all put applications right in, which we got, as you can imagine, inundated with a lot of applications. And then with NHS England, we went through and we sort of whittled down and we chose 15. Which, you know, we got a variety, which is what we wanted, to be able to then provide all the evidence back to NHS England as to why this is so needed to be made mandatory. This is now the discussions we're having around making amendments to the food standards so that we can become, it can become mandatory. So every hospital in the country then would then have to feed the parent that stays overnight with their child.
Okay.
And that's our aim for the next year or two, is to become mandatory. But then then we've had some amazing success. Like a lot of hospitals, they outsource the food. They out to different providers who then bring in the food. So Appetito being the biggest one of the country. And then you've got ones like Medirest, which do about 20 hospitals in the country. They provide all the food for Rural Surrey being one of them. And that was one of the hospitals we've been doing this project work with. And I met with the directors of Medirest, and they rolled out a few weeks ago, we did a big press release, that they will now, across all of their hospitals, feed every resident parent that stays with their child. It's about 1,000 children's beds in total, includes King's Hospital. You know, they do, it's a lot, and they will fund it all, not the NHS, which is unbelievable, to be honest, that we've got an extra now 1,000 children's beds that every parent in those hospitals will be fed, thanks to places like Medirest, is unbelievable.
Most people would think that the food, big hospital like QA, for instance, the food is downstairs, it's cooked, it's brought up to the wards. It's not the point, it's not the way, is it?
No, it's all brought in.
Am I right in thinking that actually Portsmouth's hospital food comes from Cardiff?
It used to be to Tifley Valley, but that went bust, and it's now brought in from there's this Appetito, so it's all brought in so it's not Wales anymore. It has improved, but it's still, Appetito is not, in my eyes, great for children.
So when they say I don't want any cheese, actually it was cooked in Wales 2 days ago, and I'm afraid if it's got cheese on, it's got cheese on.
Yeah, so a lot of the food is, in a lot of hospitals, is outsourced, brought in, and it's like in regen ovens, so it's all reheated up and served on the day. So it's like microwave, like equivalent of, and it's all served to you. There are some hospitals that still have on-site chefs. So Winchester and Basingstoke still have chefs that cook on-site and provide all the food to the patients.
Okay.
There are still, sadly, not enough in my eyes.
Yeah.
Out of all the 12 hospitals, there was only a couple that actually cook on site still. The rest is all outsourced and brought in. But, it creates all different challenges, and I've learned so much about the NHS, more than I ever realised, around the red tape and how they all set up, and it's so different for every single one, and causes a few headaches in times, but I do truly believe that we can make some of these changes, and there's, say, changes we're making with the government, with the cancer work, and feeding parents with the NHS and the children's food of the NHS. You know, there's lots. And to hear families up and down the country messaging us, thanking us for what we're providing.
Absolutely.
It's truly unbelievable. And when I went and did the
Why?
Tour,
you work so hard for it. Why is it unbelievable?
I think it's just how far it's spread. I went and visited quite a lot of hospitals in the north that we're funding, and seeing her posters up and hearing about these families and the difference just receiving some food made, knowing that this came from starting from a daughter whose wish down in near Portsmouth wanted this to happen, and I'm up in Bolton with families who have got in huge levels of deprivation up there, massive, and they wouldn't have had any food had they not been fed for us. And it blows my mind what we've managed to do in 2.5 years. It is unbelievable. But I know that I am probably not always the easiest to try and I know what I need, and I'm very strong and determined to try and achieve that, which not everyone will probably like. But
no.
I'm a woman on a mission to try
Absolutely.
And make these changes, because I made that promise to Sophie.
So what's next?
And I won't stop. Keep carrying on what we're doing, and I'm determined. I hope in the next year I can come back and say I've ticked one of her wishes off.
Haven't you got an issue with a certain minister at the moment?
Yes, I met with Wes Streeting a month ago. He's agreed to overturn the Cancer Task Force, but we're waiting for that to be written writing.
A lot of people wouldn't know about this.
No.
What happened with the Cancer Task Force?
It was signed off on the last day of the last government, and everything was put through so that the new government would have to either cancel or pause it to stop it from going ahead. And that's what they did, sadly. When they came in, they paused all of it. And thanks to our supporters again for writing to all of their MPs, they got inundated. Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, agreed to meet with me and my MP, Caroline Dynage. We met with him at the beginning of November. And after 45 minutes with me in a room and Caroline, he agreed to overturn that decision. We're now just waiting for that confirmation in writing, which sadly taken a month
If they do overturn that, what will that bring for you?
So that will mean that we can carry on with the changes on the children's cancer, which will be some real fundamental changes. It will really change from awareness campaigns to improving how the research side of children's cancer. There was a lot to come out, and there was a golden piece of information given to us at that meeting, in that we've said a long time about the long-term effects and the cost to the NHS that this causes, because these children are given adult drugs. And they've done a bit of research project, thanks to all of the work we've done, and it costs the NHS every year £8 billion
wow.
a year to just look after these children for the rest of their lives through the impact of their treatment from the cancer, not through the cancer itself.
Wow.
So we know that there is so much work to be done that can save a fortune long term.
Last song.
Yes.
We're not going to get it all in. We're going to miss about 20 seconds
fine.
Of it. Ark of a Rainbow. Now, this is a local artist. Went to school locally. Did she not go down?
She lives in Stubbington,
yeah.
In our village, and wrote this song for Sophie.
Ark of a Rainbow, Joe Downs. Charlotte, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
See you next year.
What a difference you've made.